T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, gang, 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 welcome back. Sports Talk Saturday, hour two coming your way. A little later than normal, but had a great conversation with Michael Kist last half hour. Went a little late, and now we're going to have another great conversation with Bruce Nolan here of Buffalo Rumblings. Bruce, good afternoon and happy lunch hour to you, my friend. Anything on tap for your lunch slash dinner schedule this weekend with the bye week that you'd like to share with the rest of us?
My wife makes an unbelievable chicken noodle soup. And so we had that last night. We're going to have the kind of having leftovers of the chicken noodle soup for the remainder of the day. The key is to use ditalini pasta because it's a smaller pasta. It can really absorb that broth. And, you know, people think it's only, you know, for minestrone soup and for maybe some chilies if you put pasta in there. No. It's good for chicken noodle soup, too. That's really the key.
I think I'm with you on that. And, you know, I think the one great thing about chicken noodle soup is you're going to spend a lot of time on it, but you're spending a lot of time on something that should last roughly 4 days in the fridge, and you basically have lunch for all 4 days. Can I just add, if you, and I'm sure, I don't want to assume you don't already have this ready to go, but like a fresh Italian bread that you cut and then dip when it's real, real soft and delicious, and you just dip it in the broth and,
absolutely.
Yeah, the fresh bread with it is actually a major, major, major key. Bruce, I had a really interesting discussion. We were talking about some of the struggling offenses around the league with Michael Kist last half hour. We talked a lot about the Eagles and the Ravens. And, you know, I know you've really been diving more so this year, maybe more than ever, into the film and about the Bills. And, you know, part of what I was talking about with Michael Kist is, what the hell is going on with this Bills run game? How do the Bills get out of this funk that is the Bills running game? And I think for the most part, there's this common idea that Brian Daboll is holding back this run game. And, you know, part of the narrative becomes Brian Daboll's actually out in front of the media at the podium saying, hey, you know, the struggles in the run game, those fall on me. I got to call better plays. And I agree to a certain extent, Bruce. But one of the things that me and Mike were talking about is just how much Josh Allen is asked of in a week in and week out basis from a young third year quarterback perspective. There may not be another young quarterback in the league right now that's asked at the line of scrimmage to do more than Josh Allen in terms of moving in and out of plays. And right now, I think the struggles that the Bills run game is having has more to do with what defenses are doing to fool Josh Allen pre-snap than whatever play is being called. And I'm wondering what you think, you know, pre-snap, if you had to give a grade to Josh Allen right now, I would probably give him like a B-, C+. Which is really good, considering he's a 24-year-old player who's basically doing the same things that Peyton Manning does, in, you know, during the course of a game, where he's checking in and out of run looks, going into different plays, and he's given the freedom that a lot of other quarterbacks around the league aren't. So, just kind of your thoughts about where you are with Josh Allen and where it, maybe the blame goes for why this running game just has not taken off the way that I think a lot of people thought it would, or at least have moderate success like people thought.
I think I would agree that Josh Allen has been asked to do things at a high level at the line of scrimmage. And really, that just kind of gets extrapolated to what Josh Allen's been asked to do in general. I mean, with very little run game and with an inconsistent defense, this team has gone as Josh Allen has gone thus far this year. And part of that is Josh Allen at the line of scrimmage. We've seen him check into good run plays. We've seen him check into bad run plays. And part of the thing that you have happen as you try to develop a running game is that you are limited in your scope of play calls by the talent you have. So, for example, the Buffalo Bills do not have fast running backs. Right? There was this idea that there was going to be a lightning and thunder with Devin Singletary. I was like, listen, I don't know if you've seen Devin Singletary run the 40-yard dash, but lightning is not the way you would describe it. Really, it's semi-thunder and semi-thunder, right? These are vision and contact balance related running backs. And because of that, you have to make accommodations. And we've seen the jet sweep with Isaiah McKenzie be used as an accommodation, but now teams are starting to adjust to that. So what you're seeing is you're seeing teams blitz the slot defender on the opposite side of the jet motion. And so now, just like they adjusted to this, we have to adjust to that. So now a great example would be, hey, we have been better running out of 10 formation, 10 personnel than we have done out of 11. And we ran out of 11 over and over and over again against the Cardinals, and it wasn't working. But the Bills rushing out of 10 personnel this year are averaging over 5 yards a carry. And that is because they have gotten not only lackluster play from their tight ends, but also when you have a team like the Arizona Cardinals, when the Bills rolled out 11 personnel, sometimes the Cardinals rolled out base defense. Now, it's important to note that for the Cardinals, Isaiah Simmons is a linebacker. So when they say base defense, you're talking about two linebackers and Isaiah Simmons, who is listed as a linebacker. But even their base is a little bit lighter, but it's still base defense. So when you roll out 11 and they roll out nickel, that's going to be decent. But when you roll out 11 and they roll out base, and you're not getting great play from your tight end, you're going to have trouble there. In addition, the guard play has been less than stellar. So you have all these things kind of working in concert together. You have the health of the guards and the ineffectiveness that you've gotten from your guard play, specifically Brian Winters. Then also, you have the fact that there's certain limitations you have based on the personnel you do have. And then the plan that you had to accommodate for your lack of speed at the running back position, that's now getting countered as well. So you have multiple things at play, all of which has to be addressed individually at the bye week to get this game running. But part of it is just Josh Allen and time. Part of it is just, hey, I need to understand when the numbers are not in my favor, and I need to check out.
You know, though, Bruce, I think the next phase of the adjustments that need to be made, and I think, you know, I know you were talking a little bit about the tweet that I had about the five straight series run that the Bills had in the third quarter that leaked into the fourth quarter, and then ensued a big argument on Twitter about semantics. Well, when does the third quarter really start, and when does it end, and can we pigeonhole this in just to the third quarter? But the defense, and I think everyone started making this into a semantics argument about, well, just how much are they really struggling in the third quarter? I think there's two things I can look at that to say, yes, they're struggling. Is they are struggling to find, you know, maybe they come out early on the first drive and they'll go down and score like they have the last 2 weeks. And then they go on a streak of four or five straight series where you go three and out, or you get bailed out by a penalty, but then you basically go five and out. And I think part of their issues, you know, are stemming from the adjustment to the adjustment. And it's less about, and that's what becomes so nuanced about the game of football, is it really truly becomes a chess match. And one of the things I know you were looking at is their cover zero blitz beater, which is a play that they ran with success on the first time they tried it against the Cardinals. We know that it worked the previous week against the Seahawks. We knew that it worked the previous week against the Patriots, and we knew that it almost scored a touchdown against the Jets. So that's four straight weeks on film that the Bills have used that little slip screen to John Brown against zero blitz. Well, when the Bills tried to go back to the well in the second half, the Cardinals knew it was coming. So in your estimation, what is the next phase of zero blitz and how the Bills beat that? My answer, and I said this yesterday to Joe Marino, was I think my answer now becomes RPO. And I think it's the answer to a lot of things, Bruce. I think it's the answer to, well, how do you have more success running the football out of 11 personnel? I think my answer is RPO. I think, what are your answers of having more success against zero blitz? I think my answer becomes RPO. So I think for me, it's less about asking Josh Allen to make checks in or out of run looks at the line of scrimmage and more about giving him the opportunity to do either in one play.
I would agree with that. I absolutely think RPO is an answer. I think that really if you go double slot, if you're in 10 personnel and you go double slot, and you have the ability built into the play for both of your slot receivers, whether that's McKenzie and Beasley or whether that's Gabe Davis and Beasley, whoever it is, to make sight adjustments to zero blitz and give Josh Allen two options against pressure on either side, that's a benefit. If you give him an RPO, that's a benefit. I think that just having one answer to any given problem is always going to come back at you. Football defensive coordinators and football offensive coordinators are far too smart to get devolved into simply rock, paper, scissors. If I know you're going to throw rock, I'm going to throw paper. That's just the way this is. You cannot be that simplistic. You have to have multiple answers. And your personnel gives you answers. But in addition, your personnel limits your answers. And the Bills have been successful in 10. I agree with you. I think RPO out of 10 personnel, running the ball out of 10 personnel, I think that's the next phase, the next evolution of the Buffalo Bills against cover zero, cover one pressure.
And then you mentioned the offensive line, and I know they definitely wear a bit of the blame here, Bruce, but I also think, you know, we talked a little bit about, I think there's levels to the run game right now and the lack of success. We talked a little bit about Josh Allen's role in that. We talked about, you know, Brian Daboll's role in that, and we now just kind of talked about the defenses and what teams are running against the Bills' role in that. But how much of this really does, and maybe I'll make too much of it, and maybe you'll say, Nate, I actually think it's more on the offensive line than it is the running backs. I've been disappointed at times that the running backs haven't been able to make that first guy miss. And their games, both of their games, are predicated on the first guy's got to miss. That's how each of those guys have success in this league, is the yards after contact. And I don't think either of them right now are thriving in that area. But I do believe a lot of this has to do with the offensive line needs to play better, in particular in the interior. And the sooner you can get Brian Winters out of the starting lineup, I think you're going to benefit greatly.
I would agree with that. I do think that the running backs have a role to play in this, and they have not been playing well after contact. But qualitatively, the type of contact you get matters. If you get that contact in the backfield before you put your foot in the ground and cut up field, that's different. If you get that contact isolated on the edge, that's different. Your probability as a running back of being able to break a tackle is not just based on your own ability to break tackles. It's based on where and when you acquire the contact. And when you have, you know, an outside zone play where both of your backside offensive linemen are not able to hold on or cut, and you have a situation where you have Zach Moss trying to plant his foot in the ground, and by the time he's trying to plant his foot in the ground, you've got people collapsing back on him, then that contact is different than contact where you're able to get up ahead of steam, where there's a momentum to your movement, where it's isolated, where there's one person and not two people. The type of contact is important. And I do think that when it comes to a flow chart or a chicken and the egg conversation, I do think the offensive line takes priority over the running back. If the offensive line is doing their job and the running backs are only getting at that point what is blocked for them, then I will move on and say, okay, hey, it's a running back thing. For me, yes, I acknowledge it's an issue, but I don't know if it's an issue if the rest of the things that are apart from the running backs are operating as intended.
Bruce Nolan here on the Wester Hotline from Buffalo Rumblings. He is the host of the Bruce Exclusive Podcast. Before I think we spend roughly 5 to 10 minutes talking about the Miami Dolphins, I want to end the Bills conversation about I think a position that I'm starting to maybe put on high alert, and that's the tight end position. You sort of alluded to it, but I have been frankly really disappointed in the play of Dawson Knox. And I think what frustrates me, Bruce, isn't a level of, how would I want to describe this? It's disappointment because it feels like his mistakes are mistakes that he's not learning from, that he's making a concentrated type of mistake over and over and over again. And they seem like lazy mistakes. And to me, that does not bode well for your ability here to be long-term, because those are not the types of mistakes this coaching staff takes lightly?
The Bills prioritize elite athletes they believe can be coached up. You saw it with Tremaine Edmonds. You saw it with Josh Allen. You saw it with Dawson Knox. Well, two out of three ain't bad, because Dawson Knox is acting right now like a really good athlete who still doesn't know how to play the position of tight end. And that's part of playing tight end, is not just being a great athlete, but understanding projections, understanding blocking leverage, understanding how to get open. Right now, he's still an elite athlete. He hasn't progressed the way that we all thought he was going to, the way I thought he was going to. I drafted Dawson Knox in a dynasty fantasy league because I thought this was potentially a year where he could break out. And Josh Allen said, hey, there's a chance by the end of 2020 we're looking at Dawson Knox as a top 10 tight end. And that wasn't something that he said just because he thought, hey, you know, I'm going to buff my guy up. He didn't have to say that, but he thought there was going to be a next step. And while there was a next step for Josh Allen and a next step for Tremaine Edmonds, there hasn't been a next step for Dawson Knox. And I think that that becomes kind of a, okay, we're not going to say that it's not possible at this point. We're not going to say that Dawson Knox still can't take it, because we gave Tremaine Edmonds time. We gave Josh Allen time. We said, oh, he's a really raw player coming out. We gave him time. Well, we still got to give that same time to Dawson Knox. Dawson Knox was rawer of a tight end than Josh Allen was a quarterback. So I'm not saying don't give him time. I'm saying this idea that we're good there and we don't need to hedge that position against the possibility that Dawson Knox doesn't develop, I think has gone out the window. Unless Dawson Knox really turns a corner these last couple of weeks of the season, and, you know, Tyler Croft made a restructured contract, he's going to be a free agent. The Bills are going to have a hole there, because you can't go into 2021 assuming the development. Assuming the development is always a bad thing. So we want to hope for the development, and if it happens, great. But at this point, I think we have to hedge.
And I also I want to make note, Bruce, that the 2021 draft will likely go down as one of the deepest and maybe one of the most volume-driven tight end drafts in the last 25 years. So they're going to have opportunities to make additions to the room. Not only that, Zach Ertz is going to be available. Is David Njoku going to stick around in Cleveland with what they've got? Like, there are guys that are going to be available this offseason for them to try to get better at the position. So that's, I think part of what I was kind of alluding to there is the types of mistakes he's making aren't ones that bode well for you in the eyes of a guy like Sean McDermott. They just don't. All right, I want to shift gears here for the last 5 minutes or so. I want to give you, I don't know if you had an opportunity to listen to Joe and I's podcast the other day, but I want to kind of give you my thoughts on the Dolphins and then let you either tell me I'm an idiot, I'm right, and I'm brilliant, and then I kind of want your thoughts on it. But I really like the Dolphins. I like what they're doing. I like how they've been built. I like how quickly they were able to build. I low-key like the change to Tua, even though it came with a lot of negativity because of how well Ryan Fitzpatrick was played, and I think it was more about what people thought of Fitzpatrick than the actual move itself. I like what their defense is doing from a scheme standpoint. They are doing some things that are confusing quarterbacks. Having said that, I don't understand where this, you know, why they're the darlings right now. Based on the teams the Bills have beat, the Bills maybe have one of the more impressive, like, schedules and seven win records in the league. They have beaten good football teams, not paper tigers like last year, where I think the Dolphins have been the beneficiary of one of the league's easiest schedules. And frankly, I don't think they've beaten a damn team. They beat Arizona. That seemed a little fluky. They beat the Rams. That was fluky. Where are you with this Dolphins team? I like them. I think that they're a team to be reckoned with in the future. But this is a 9... I mean, at the absolute best 10-win football team. And the fact that, you know, they're being talked about as easily the best team, they've got the best quarterback, I just don't understand why people are jumping on the Miami Dolphins so quickly and why it's taken still, after 7 wins and a partial MVP campaign from the quarterback in Buffalo, that how people can just breeze right over the Bills and start talking about the Dolphins when they've made, like, this has been a long time coming for the Bills. This is the last 3 weeks for the Dolphins.
I think that when people talk about the Dolphins, they're making some assumptions that I don't think are based in any sort of historical data. I'll give you a great example. So I've said a lot on my podcast that how and why you win are more predictive of future wins than the fact that you win. Go back and watch the Rams-Dolphins game. That was a game that was simply christened by the football god that the Miami Dolphins were going to win that game. That is not a sustainable method of winning. And so what you're having happen is people assume that defenses who are playing well will continue to play exactly that well forever. But then they're also assuming that the quarterback will continue to progress. So if you think, man, the defense is a 10 right now, and the quarterback's a 6, but man, he's going to be a 10 too. Then you're like, oh my gosh, look what's coming for the Dolphins. And that's what gets you all excited as a national media member, because you're forgetting the fact that Tua's going to have to get better to make up for the regression to the mean that you're going to see from the Dolphins' defense. The Dolphins' defense has been playing well. I'm not saying they haven't. They've absolutely been playing well. I love what Brian Flores is doing. I think Brian Flores is a great coach. I said it this offseason, and I think that Brian Flores' defense is starting to adopt that we can do whatever we need to do to beat you that week because we have the horses. It's devolving into that sort of situation that you saw from the New England Patriots all those many years, because they have corners who can hold up in man, and they've got linebackers who can do multiple things, and they've got heavy-handed compression rushers on the edge. Emmanuel Ogba, Shaq Lawson, they've got players who can do things that whatever the defensive plan needs to be that week, the Dolphins can do it. But here's what's not sustainable is lots of defensive touchdowns. Here's what's not sustainable, lots of special teams touchdowns. Those types of things aren't sustainable. And so the Dolphins can continue to play well and not have those things happen. And then all of a sudden, the national media goes, what happens to the Dolphins? Nothing happened to the Dolphins.
Right.
The Dolphins just had scenarios where they were playing above the X's and O's, which you could only do for so long. And so I do think that the Dolphins are a good team. But you have the next couple of games for the Dolphins as being the Broncos with their backup quarterback, the Jets who are a tire fire, and the Bengals. Well, let's just stop at the Bengals real fast. The Bengals beat the Titans.
Agreed.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Bruce, Burrow, on my we have a bet board here in the studio, and I have the Bengals beating the Dolphins. And I did this a couple of weeks ago with Joe DiBiase, but I have the Bengals beating the Dolphins.
I don't think that's insane, especially when you consider that Joe Burrow will be three games along farther than Tua is. And if the Dolphins' defense doesn't come to play the way that they came to play against the Rams, then it's not going to be quite what they want it to be against Joe Burrow. This could be a game where it's a measuring stick about a quarterback who's a couple games in versus a quarterback who's many games in to his rookie season. So that's not an absolute, you know, game-changing, just slam dunk, hey, it's a win. And then you got Chiefs, Patriots, Raiders, Bills.
That's a tough stretch
all four
run, man.
Of those teams.
Yeah,
that's a tough go for the Dolphins. So I think we're just assuming things.
It sounds like 9-7,
Bruce.
The
national media is assuming things.
It's what it sounds like 9-7
to me.
And you know, that's my point all along is. And listen, it comes from a concentrated area. It's coming from Fox Sports, and I get that. You know, like there are guys that just do not want to give the Bills any credit. But Michael Kist on this program, who called the Bills last year a paper tiger, came in here and said, yeah, the Bills are for real. Like, the Bills have impressive wins, their resume. If they get to 11 wins, that'll be the most impressive 11-win schedule that you're going to see across the league. And I believe that. I don't care that the Bills don't get the credit that they deserve, but what has moved into the territory pissing me off a little bit is that the Dolphins are getting this credit when the Bills have already done what the Dolphins did. And they did that last year. The Bills did what the Dolphins are doing last year. So, you know, I don't know. It comes to a point where it's the bye week, and this will be my area to complain. But, yeah, I like what the Dolphins are doing. I'm with you. I think we're both saying the same thing. We like what the Dolphins are doing, but I think we're far more realistic about their odds of being a division winner, which I think sits at about 25%.
Yeah, I can see an outcome where the Dolphins win. I can see an outcome where the Dolphins win the AFC East. Now, the next question is, how probable is that outcome?
Right.
And specifically, when you look at their defense, you're just assuming a bunch of things when you say slam dunk they're going to win a division title. You're assuming the defense continues to play out of their ever-living mind. I had to do an entire podcast series on why that style of defense is not sustainable relating to the 2017 Jaguars and the 2018 Bears. And the 2020 Dolphins are getting that same style of defense. They're getting crazy amounts of turnovers, which are partially random. They're getting defensive touchdowns, which are partially random. That doesn't mean they're not a great defense. They are a great defense. But right now, that's making up for Tua. So Tua has to develop, and the defense has to continue on that torrid pace. And it's just assumptions that you're making, and you're projecting that just because something is, therefore it's going to be. And that's just not necessarily the way football works.
Yeah, I love that, Bruce. Hey, buddy, appreciate you as always hopping on. I'm sure we'll be doing it again soon here in the coming weeks. Tell the folks where they can find all your work.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Nate. I really appreciate it. My name is Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Exclusive. And you can look for episodes of my podcast, The Bruce Exclusive, dropping on the Buffalo Rumblings Podcast Network every Thursday and Friday, wherever you get your podcast.
Awesome. Appreciate you, brother. Bruce Nolan here on the Western Hotline. As always, my friend, enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, you too, man.
Awesome. Bruce Nolan there. Quick time out of the side. Michael Leone of Establish the Run. That's coming up next here on WGR.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, gang, welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Let's go right back to the West Her Hotline. Joining me now is Director of Analytics for Establish the Run, Michael Leone. Mike, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, Nate.
Of course, my pleasure. We've got a lot to talk about, so let's just kind of hop right into the what I guess we could coin today as the quarterback shuffle, because it's been a conversation about a lot about offense this morning and into the afternoon and quarterbacks around the league. And, you know, I know the last time you and I spoke would have been earlier on in the season. So far, though, I mean, there's no doubt from a true success marker that Josh Allen has had wild amounts of success. And even if he doesn't get any better than some of the ebbs and flows, if he's just in the middle of the best and worst of his football this year, I think the Bills have a franchise quarterback, which, you know, I know neither you or I might have said this time last year. But overall, and I think now, Mike, there is a large enough sample size from the second half of last year and the first half of this year for us to look at a full season and body of work. What are your overall thoughts from, and is there anything that stands out to you about Josh Allen's game that, or maybe that stands out to you from a positive or negative light?
Yeah, there are a few things. You know, first off, I was not a fan of the Allen pick when they took him. You know, it was something that it seemed like a bit of a reach on this raw talent that a lot of times we don't see develop in the NFL. So I think right off the bat, you just have to give a ton of kudos to Allen for the hard work he's put in, and he sort of has established himself as this outlier. And I think it's really interesting if you look at his growth, and sometimes we need to understand growth with players isn't linear. You know, it doesn't follow this straight line path of just continually getting better. And the first year for Allen, what we saw that was encouraging was some big plays down the field with Robert Foster, some big plays with his flags. We saw the splash plays from Allen, but he was terribly inconsistent, you know, the extremely low completion percentage and some issues there. Then you fast forward to year two, and he starts to show that he can handle a bigger passing load. You know, he takes a few less sacks last season. His interception rate drops quite a bit. The completion percentage comes up, but we lose those splash plays. You know, we didn't see a whole ton of those last season. So overall, it was kind of a net neutral type thing for him in year two, where we saw some positive signs, but he also lost some of what made him, you know, potentially valuable. Now here we are in year three, and we're seeing the positives from both of the first two seasons, and it's just a joy to watch. You know, he's handling the big passing load, huge leap forward in completion percentage, but we're seeing the big plays baked in there as well. So, you know, that's huge. And also, his sack rate has really dropped this season. So it's hard to pinpoint one thing, Nate, because it's really across the board a really exciting time to be a Bills fan.
Yeah, and, you know, I think as much as maybe the run offense hasn't quite found the success that I think it has under previous years under Sean McDermott, the one aspect of this that I do find maybe to be the most interesting, and the one that I kind of keep trying to drive home, is I'm trying to give as much credit to Sean McDermott for the style of play that this team has adopted. And it's not to take anything away from Josh Allen or Brian Daboll, because I think both of them have, you know, a big part. I mean, maybe the biggest part of this. But none of it actually happens unless Sean McDermott makes a pretty ideological change on who he is as a football coach and how he believes teams can win with, you know, more than just one season, but, you know, sustainable winning style. Like the fact that you get Sean McDermott for a long time who preached, you know, limit possessions, win, you know, on the ground in ground and pound, and be the team with the last possession, right? Like that was his ideology going into this. That's how he got a head coaching job. So for him to switch the ideological makeup of his team and how they win football games, a lot of the success that Daboll and Allen have had has to go, a little of that credit has to go to Sean McDermott, I think.
Yeah, I think we even had a conversation about how last season early on it looked like the Bills wanted to be, you know, this pass to
That's
win,
right.
pass heavy team, and they sort of scaled back, and we were wondering coming into this year, you know, is McDermott going to let Daboll take the team to the next level in that regard? And he has, and I have a pass rate over expectation model that basically looks at every team's play, and based on the down, the distance, the score differential, you know, some of those factors, what does the average NFL team do in that situation? And the Bills are third highest in the entire NFL. The only teams above them are the Seattle Seahawks and Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. So those are, you know, that's pretty good company as far as running an offense that has, you know, the type of ceiling that you want. You know, and I know we have slated to talk about Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, who are a bit more run-heavy offenses. And there's a tendency sometimes to think a run-heavy offense can be friendly to a quarterback. You know, you protect them a bit, you hide them a bit. I think there's a little bit of a fallacy there. I mean, you look at the Jets, they run on second and long and those situations, and what happens is you put your quarterback in third and long in these really undesirable situations. So you think you're protecting him, but the best way to kind of get ahead of the chain, so to speak, is to have a pass-heavy approach. You know, the efficiency in the pass game versus the run game across the entire NFL, it's nowhere near an equilibrium. You know, passing is much more efficient. And in terms of pure success rate, too, it's a lot closer than you would think, where you think, well, rushing is a little bit safer than passing. You know, that's not entirely true. It's pretty close in that regard, and you just have more explosiveness in the pass game.
And I think, man, what a great transition into the Ravens and sort of what they have done over the last 2.5 years has led to a moment where I think I don't want to say there's an identity crisis happening in Baltimore. And I actually, you know, speaking with Michael Kist about this, Mike, is I think I want to blame more of their regression on Greg Roman than I want to blame on Lamar Jackson. And maybe that's a defense mechanism, as the type of person who, you know, I think in years past has defended Lamar Jackson as the nuanced passer, because I still think that that's true to a certain extent. But I don't think there's any doubt that there are limitations that are built into Lamar Jackson as a passer. But I also want to point out that I don't think he's asked to do certain things as a passer. And if he were to be asked by Greg Roman to do them, I still think there's a level of competence there that he could do things right now he's not currently being asked to do.
Yeah, and you know, it's difficult. Everything went so well for the Ravens last year, you know. And when those things pile out one on top of the other, and you just have this season where they were playing from ahead, basically
every week,
you know, from week five onward, that they could do whatever they wanted, and you know, teams weren't necessarily prepared for the way they were going to play. So you mentioned it's an identity crisis. I think a little bit what's going on here is they're pass heavier than last year. You know, they're still a very run heavy team, but it feels like they're trying to experiment a little bit, knowing that they're not just going to be playing from ahead all the time. And, you know, we saw the issues they had in the playoffs last year playing from behind against the Tennessee Titans, and they want to be prepared for that type of situation. So there's part of me that wonders if they're almost just toying around with the regular season a little bit, and we'll see what happens as things, you know, develop over the course of the season and what their identity really is when in the highest leverage situations and the highest leverage games. But that said, you know, it's obvious that teams are adjusting a little bit to what they're doing. You know, the run game efficiency isn't as high as last year. Teams are prepared to face the Ravens as a four-down team compared to a three-down team, and but ultimately, I think we're going to see some improvement from this offense over the second half of the year. There's been a lot of close connections between Hollywood Brown and Lamar Jackson. Mark Andrews.
Yeah, hello, Mark Andrews.
Hi.
Times. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think they've got the playmakers in place in Hollywood and Andrews that they can kind of, oddly, I feel like the ceiling might even be a little bit higher than last year, even though it seems the exact opposite right now.
Man, I love your point about whether or not they might be playing around, right? Like, part of me thinks there are two teams in the NFL that can do that. And I think one team, to me, is the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think the other can be the Baltimore Ravens. But I think the Ravens have to be careful, Mike, because this isn't the AFC of last year. Like, they could very well, at 10 wins, miss the playoffs. Like, I think the AFC is deep enough this year where I don't think that they have the luxury like they did last year to be a team that wants to sputter a little bit while they try some different things out. This is not the year, from an offensive efficiency and output standpoint, that should lead you to believe you have the opportunity to try some things while you maybe work your way through some struggles.
Yeah, if we do want to look at some negatives, you know, they lost Ronnie Stanley, one of the better offensive linemen in the game, to injury for the season. That hurts. You look at Lamar Jackson's sack rate, it's gone up, and that's an underrated aspect of a lot of the improved offensive efficiency we've seen across the league this year. There's a lot of teams out there that are just taking less sacks, and that's really critical. You know, Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen are two of those quarterbacks. You look at their sack rates, they've dropped from around 7% last season to around 4%. Those are really big drop-offs in efficiency, whereas Lamar Jackson's sack rate has gone up. And, you know, that's an issue for an offense that isn't necessarily consistently making big chunk plays in the passing game. You know, they're getting you in the run game 6 yards at a pop, which they're an outlier team. They can do that. They're going to go for it on fourth down, but you start taking sacks, you start taking away some of the flexibility of that offense.
Michael Leone here from Establish the Run. He's the director of analytics over there on the Wester Hotline. I also want to talk about the Browns and the sustainability of their current model. I think we all knew what to expect from a Kevin Stefanski offense if you've watched Gary Kubiak coach in this league. And, you know, most of us have a pretty good understanding of how Gary Kubiak wants to win football games. Before we talk about the element of Baker Mayfield within that, do you believe that if they're both healthy, they basically are on a volume pace to see both of their running backs get over 1,000 yards rushing. Is that going to be the model for them this year, next year, and into the future. I mean, they've paid Kareem Hunt to basically be there side by side with Nick Chubb. And I think both guys are, there's enough of the ball, oddly enough and crazy enough, to go around for both of them. But is there enough ball for Odell Beckham and for Jarvis Landry and for Austin Hooper and for all the other passing elements they have to also live in a symbiotic world where all of them can be happy? And I don't know that they can, but in the backfield, is that a sustainable model that they've created there?
I'm skeptical of the upside of that type of model, building this run-heavy approach. And as you mentioned, it's not a surprise. It's exactly what he did in Minnesota. You know, it was more of a one-back system in Minnesota with Dalvin Cook, but it's a really high rush rate, a lot of play-action stuff, and I'm a big proponent of play-action stuff. We've seen that it works whether or not you're really strong in the run game, and Kirk Cousins had a lot of success under Stefanski last year. He's still doing it this year. And Mayfield has quietly improved. His volume's down so low that it sort of doesn't look like it on the surface. So, you know, I think they've done some good things, but ultimately, in today's NFL, I think you need a pass-heavier approach to reach your real ceiling. Unless you're got a dynamic playmaker like Lamar Jackson and this really kind of an outlier team in Baltimore, where maybe they can make it work. But a team like Cleveland, it seems like you're just capping that upside and you're playing to sort of be, you know, slightly better than 500 type of team. And when you reach the playoffs, you've got Ben Roethlisberger and a Pittsburgh Steelers offense that's been passing like crazy and has playmakers all over the field. You've got Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City Chiefs. You've got the Bills, like some of the pass-heaviest teams in the league. And I don't know if a run-centric offense like Cleveland has is just going to cut it against those teams, especially, you know, maybe one week, but over multiple weeks that you would have to win in a playoff stretch.
Michael Leone here on the Western Hotline. All right, last thing on the Browns. You know, I guess the question really just is, what's the point of having a quarterback like Baker Mayfield? And maybe you don't even agree that Baker Mayfield is the guy that deserves volume passing numbers based on the success or lack thereof the last year and a half. But why have Baker Mayfield? Why not just put Case Keenum in the game? Because of the offense that is highlighting the running game, there doesn't really appear to be a reason to have Baker Mayfield.
It's frustrating to watch. It's also a bit of an enigma. If you look at Mayfield's rookie year, you know, the number one overall pick, guys like me that were a little bit more analytics slanted really felt like he was the clear number one pick as well. And he comes out, sets the rookie record in touchdown passes, efficient, and then they make some improvements around him, and you think it, you know, it's wheels up, like this is going to really take off. And if anything, the wheels fell off. And you could sort of blame Freddie Kitchens last year against Stefanski. This year, we've quietly seen some improvements. You know, his QBR is up to 71.3. It was in the low 50s the previous 2 years, and I think that statistic, I know some people like it, some people dislike it. I like it because I think it, you know, really accounts for what you're adding to the offense and accounts for some of the context in terms of the strength of schedule, how often you're passing, and things like the sack rate, which I mentioned is, you know, down at 4.7%, was 7% last year. So I feel like Baker is keeping that hope that, you know, he can kind of refine that form from his rookie year and continue to develop. But yeah, it's frustrating to not see him unleashed and really be able to know if that is the case. You know, one thing I will give Stefanski as far as the run-centric offense, they played the last few weeks, they played in some of the worst weather that we've seen the entire year, and that has really, you know, slanted. But even before that, they were one of the, you know, bottom teams in terms of pass rate over expectation.
All right, buddy. Appreciate you as always. Thanks for making time for us and talking some ball. We always appreciate it. Tell the folks where they can find your work and highlight a little bit of what you guys are doing over at Establish the Run, because, you know, what Evan's been able to do in kind of the year and a half they've put this project together. It's been a really impressive and fun to watch kind of as a fan of Evan and some of the guys they have over there.
Yeah, thanks for that. And you can find me at Two Hats One Mike on Twitter and over at EstablishTheRun.com. We're gonna have a lot of Black Friday sales going on next week. We've got you covered, anything from season-long fantasy football to daily fantasy sports. If you're playing on DraftKings and FanDuel, you know, we're definitely the spot. You can find projections. You can get Silva's matchup column. You can watch his web streams, which if you haven't, Silva on Friday nights is a must-see TV type of situation. And we've added basketball to our product too, so we've got that coming around with the December start. So excited for that.
Awesome, man. Well, appreciate it as always. Enjoy your weekend and enjoy your Bills bye week. It'll be nice to not have the anxiousness of Bills football. I can just kind of relax and watch football. So I know you will too. So appreciate it, brother.
Yep. Thank you, Nate.
Awesome. Mike Leone there on the Western Hotline. A quick timeout. I got to get two breaks in, and then we'll hear from Matt Verderam coming up next for Fansided. That's at 1 o'clock here on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.